of Psalms, chapter 131. My heart is not proud, Lord. My eyes are not haughty. I do not concern myself with great matters, or things too wonderful for me. But I have calmed and quieted myself. I am like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child, I am content. Israel, put your hope in the Lord both now and forevermore. May God bless this reading of His holy word.
If you want to memorize, wait, hold on. If you want to memorize a psalm other than the 23rd, which I would argue everyone should have memorized, this is a good one. It's short, only three verses, but it's absolutely packed with theology and with help for the spiritual life. I memorized it many years ago so that I could pray it in the middle of the night. If you tend to wake up in the middle of the night and worry about things, there isn't a much better antidote than a psalm of trust. You could pray the 23rd in the same way when you're anxious, but this one just feels like a lullaby. Perfect for quelling the worries that loom much larger at 3 a.m. than they do in the daylight, so that we can rest in the security of God's care and embrace. If you know this psalm from an older Bible translation, like the King James, the Revised Standard, or even the New International Version, which, to be fair, is only 8 years older than the New Revised Standard Version that we have in our pews and that was up on the screen, you'll notice a big difference in the NRSV's rendering of the second verse. Here's how the NIV, the New International Version, translates that verse. But I have stilled and quieted my soul, like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. Translation, whether from one modern language like Spanish or German to another, or from the ancient languages in which the Bible was originally written, Hebrew, Koine Greek, and a little bit of Aramaic in the book of Daniel, into a modern language, always involves interpretation. Some things just don't translate exactly. Some words in one language or another can mean more than one thing. And sometimes there are multiple words in one language and there is only one that works in the other. The three or four, depending on who you ask, words in Greek that must all be translated into English using only one word, love, are an example. So too is the Hebrew word ruach, which can mean spirit, or wind, or breath. It's up to the translator to choose which to use in any given instance, and the choice is a matter of interpretation. We see this in the very second verse of the Bible. The New International Version, in keeping with the King James Version's rendering, says, "Now the earth was formless and void. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." The NRSV puts it this way: "The earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the waters." Whether you prefer that ruach to be more accurate, ruche Elohim, the ruach of God, be translated as the Spirit of God or a wind from God, depends on what you believe about God as creator and about the role of the Holy Spirit in the work of creation. Personally, I prefer in this case to translate ruach as the King James and the NIV do, as spirit. There are lots of other places in the Bible that speak of the presence of Jesus at creation, including the prologue to the fourth gospel. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being. And what sounds like an echo of that in the first chapter of Colossians. For in him all things in heaven and earth were created. All things have been created through him and for him. And in Proverbs 8, wisdom, which some Christian theologians have equated with the Holy Spirit, speaks of being with God at creation, working beside and rejoicing with God as God set the boundaries of the sea and laid the earth's foundation. So, in my opinion, Spirit of God is a better rendering of Ruhe Elohim in Genesis 1:2. Okay, enough language lectures. You may disagree. And you are welcome to do so. But turning back now to the 131st Psalm, the interpretation involved in translating the last part of verse 2 is a little more subtle. It involves, like in the superscriptions that attribute a psalm to David or Solomon or Moses or Asaph or whoever is mentioned, the way the translator chooses to translate a preposition, that's what's at issue here. Biblical Hebrew really only had four prepositions, so each one had to wear a whole lot of different hats. Three of these are prefixes to other words, so they're basically one letter with a half vowel, what in English we call a schwa, b, k, and l. The fourth, which we see in the name Emmanuel, im, functions a little bit differently. The preposition involved in the superscriptions is le, and it can mean of, as traditionally rendered, but it can also mean for or about. The preposition in Psalm 131, verse 2, is ke, which might mean with or within, and again, which one, along with its placement in the sentence, is a matter of interpretation. The NRSV translators chose a different rendering than most of the older versions did, and it makes the psalm speak with a voice that we don't often hear in the Bible. Here's verse 2 from the NRSV again. But I have calmed and quieted my soul like a weaned child with its mother. My soul is like the weaned child that is with me. Do you hear the difference? The NIV says, my soul within me is like a weaned child. NRSV says, my soul is like the weaned child that is with me. Now we can hear a woman speaking, a mother speaking. How often does that happen in the Bible? There are only a few other places where we know that women are speaking like this, and all of them are songs. That of Miriam in Exodus 15:21, of Hannah in 1 Samuel 2, 1 through 10, and of Mary in Luke 1, 46 through 55. This mother in Psalm 131 compares her own soul before God to the weaned child she cares for. Calm and quiet in her embrace, where the child trusts he will always find love and safety. But even without this translation difference, Psalm 131 contains some pretty astounding theology. It's something else that we don't see too often in the Bible, only in a few places, like Isaiah 49:15. Can a mother forget her nursing child? Or show no compassion for the child of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you. When Jesus laments over Jerusalem in Matthew 23:37 and Luke 13:34, how often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. No matter how that last line of Psalm 131, verse 2 is rendered, the image of God in the psalm is maternal. Years ago, I used to do a Sunday afternoon service at a retirement facility not too far from my church. I had been asked to come in place of a retired pastor from our congregation. The folks at the retirement facility had taken offense when Robert told them it was time we started calling God Mother. Now, it's true that there is nowhere in the Bible where God is explicitly called Mother. And there are lots and lots and lots of places where God is called Father. It's Jesus' favorite way of talking to and about God. He went further than just Father, too. He used the term Abba, which is baby talk, like Papa or Dada. But with that said, there are these few texts that image God in a maternal way. God is like a mother. We can almost imagine the psalmist's sweet child and her own soul as becoming calm and quiet after having been something else. A weaned child could be around the age that we stereotypically refer to as the terrible twos. This child is in his mother's arms, maybe still sobbing a bit as he comes out of a tantrum. Little kids throw tantrums oftentimes because they don't have any other way to express frustration with the limits that have been placed on them by their parents, by the world around them, and sometimes even by their own littleness. The tempest has blown itself out, and now the toddler seeks comfort in the one place he knows he can always find it, even after having tested his mother's patience, as kids sometimes do. Perhaps the psalmist, too, has come out of a period of turmoil, frustrated because she can't have or do or be something she desperately wants. She may be experiencing grief because of a tragic loss and has worn herself out asking why. She finally lets go of what isn't possible, or lets go of the need to have an answer to an unanswerable question. And then she, like her child, grows calm in the one place she knows she will always find comfort, compassion, and love, in the arms of her God. Nurturing and strong like a father, compassionate and fierce like a mother.